the demigods. We're not much interested in him. Then there is the Lord Shiva beyond this universe, across the Viraja. That's Vaishnava Yathasambhu. That's the Lord Shiva, which is the greatest Vaishnava. And higher than that, we find Lord Shiva in Vrindavan as the guard of the Rasa Lila. That's called Gopeshwar Mahadev. He's Mahadev. You know how he got that name, Mahadev? This will be interesting for those of you interested in medicine and things. The demigods were all plying in the early part of the universe. Deva means the devas, the demigods, and Maha means the greatest. So they were all plying for this title. Who will be the greatest? So Vishnu, Lord Brahma told, it whittled down to Lord Brahma. The three, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Really almost to Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu. And Brahma said, I create, therefore I must be Mahadev. Lord Vishnu said, but I maintain whatever you create. So I must be Mahadev. Then Lord Shiva said, yes, but I destroy what you create and what you maintain. And then they both looked at him and said, yes, but you only do that at the end. And Lord Shiva said, no, I do it any time I want. And they said, no, you do not have the potency in your din-din drum. He plays his drum, and it creates a sound vibration, which disadjusts everything in the universe, and everything is destroyed from that sound. He said, no, you can't do that. He said, yes, I can. And Lord Shiva then set about in his meditation, and he created disease. He created all the types of diseases that there are, and they just went through the universe and started devouring the universe. And everybody in the universe was dying, the whole universe. Then everybody surrendered. You must do something. The universe is going to be destroyed. Then who's Mahadev? Yes, you are Mahadev. You have to do something. You have to do something. So then he created a son whose name is Agastya. And this Agastya, he created his son of himself. And his son was only as big as Lord Shiva's thumb. So amongst all the sages, this Agastya, he's called Agastya Muni. He's a real small guy. But he weighs more than all the other sages and demigods put together. He's what we call a heavy dude. So, he created Agastya Muni, his son, of himself. He made his expansion as Agastya. Then he told Agastya, find out some cure for all this. So then Agastya sat down in meditation and contemplated all the diseases. What was that? Can you remember that? There were something like 2,000, there were 4,000 something
444
diseases, something like 4,000 or 4 lakhs diseases. He came up, this is how many diseases there are. Then, out of each disease, he calculated there are 60 types. Say if cancer alone is a disease, there are actually 60 types of cancer. Or arthritis, for example, which is really simple. There are 60 types of arthritis. Then, he formulated 200 cures for each type of disease. So I always use that as an example. In the West, there's no cure for arthritis. And in this ancient system of medicine, which became known as Siddha, which is even older than Ayurveda, they had 60 different types of arthritis and 200 cures for each type. So 60 times 200 is 6,000. Right? So in the ancient system of medicine, there's 6,000 cures for arthritis. And in the modern system, medicine, there's none. So, but believe it or not, that's another story. But that system was called the Siddha, and it was older than the Ayurveda, and it's still practiced in certain parts of India today, which is a long, long time has passed. So anyway, that's how Lord Shiva became Mahadev. But we have a different conception of Lord Shiva, not as a demigod, not as the Mahadev of this world. But Gopeshwar is called Mahadev. So he got a very high position in Krishna pastimes. he got a position higher than any of the other demigods. So he also kept his position in his mind. Are there any other questions or comments? There were these brahmanas in Krishna's lila in this world. There were these brahmanas, and they were performing every day. They were like the smartas, or no, they're called the yogic brahmanas. Yogic. So every morning they do fire sacrifice, worship Vishnu through fire, and they offer prasad to Vishnu by offering food, grains, and things in the fire. It's called a yajna. So they're called the yajnic brahmas, and they're highly learned. And they chant many, many mantras, worshipping the Supreme Lord. They're doing all these things and worshipping the fire. So Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys were feeling some hungry. So it was around there mid-morning, I think. So Krishna told Balaram, go there in my name, or he told the cowherd boys, go there in the name of Krishna and Balaram and ask them to give what they're going to offer to the fire. Give to us, we're hungry. So the boys went there and asked, we're here, Krishna and Balaram are in the forest, they're feeling some hunger, please supply the ingredients for your fire sacrifice, we'll feed Krishna and Balaram. And they told them, get out. Go away. We're worshipping Lord Vishnu in the fire. Go away. So they returned to Krishna and told, they don't give anything. And Krishna Balaram said, well then, go see their wives. Go to their houses and ask their wives for something to eat. So immediately the boys ran there and they informed the mothers, Krishna and Balaram are in the forest. They're hungry. They're feeling hunger. They cannot tolerate the news. My son or any child is hungry. Pain. You know that pain in the stomach? They can't tolerate the thought that anybody is hungry. And hearing that Krishna and Balaram were hungry, they immediately supplied all kinds of edibles and nice foods and sweets. And they took them. So then, I forget how that happened, but the Brahmins, they came to know what had happened. They came to realize what fools we are. That we had opportunity to serve the Supreme Lord directly. He came to us and begged for food. We're so absorbed in our jnana and our ritual that we neglected him. But our wives, they're so fortunate. They're 1,000 times more better, more elevated than we are. Because considering nothing, not even if it would please or displease us, their husband, immediately they supplied whatever Krishna requested. So, like that, there are some other things we're told about that. So anyway, that's how they are the wives of the proud yogic Brahmins, because they spontaneously rendered devotion and service out of love to Krishna. Well, I'm not considering so many rules, regulations of the scriptures, taking permission from their husbands. Similarly, there's a modern-day story. When Gandhi was in India, he boycotted the Jagannath Puri temple because he wanted to go in there with his Harijans. And the Harijans mean the bungis. And the bungis are always unclean. They're the toilet cleaners. In those days, there were no flush toilets in India. It was called the dry system. Beneath every toilet was a metal bucket. All excrement went into the metal bucket, and the bungis used to come and get it, put it on their head, and take it away. So they were considered the most unclean people in the society. The British finally passed a law. They couldn't carry it on their head. They had to carry it on their side or on their shoulder. They couldn't carry it on their head. That was a bungie. So, and you know, whoever can do that work must not be too clean anyway, right? I mean, you're not going to get some really fucking person who's going to do that. Anyway, so just those lowest kind of people did that work, and that's how they lived. Well, they weren't allowed to come to the temple. So Gandhi was, he had what he called Harijan, children of God. Everyone is children of God. that's true. But there's qualification for doing worship in the temple. Anyway, the priest in Jagannath Puri, they didn't allow the Harijans to go in, and so Gandhi also, he didn't go in. And he boycotted Lord Jagannath and complained about the Harijans and all that. Then, what happened is Gandhi's wife went for darshan with some other ladies, and they went to see Lord Jagannath. And when Gandhi found out about this, he was very angry. He chastised his wife. He punished her by some means. He punished his wife. But at that time, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, this happened, and he commented that actually she had done the right thing. Lord Jagannath is the master of the universe. And who is this Gandhi? He may be your husband, but he's just a nasty fellow with a mustache. He's hardly a consideration in light of the Supreme Personality of God. So she crossed the order of her husband, and she went to Lord Jagannath. Before that, the husband had punished her. But no doubt, he incurred some grievous reaction on his end. I don't know how it came out, but if we interfere with anyone's progress or attempt to approach the Supreme Lord, then that is a very grievous type of karma or reaction we will incur. But socially, those who just follow social scripture might have said, yes, she has done wrong. Her husband didn't go, she should not go. Rightfully, he has punished her. We don't care for that section. We have a different angle of vision over everything. So these yogic brahmas, these wives of the proud yogic brahmas, they also crossed the social order, as did many, to come to Krishna. Any other questions? Yeah, you have to hear the proper conception. And if you hear about conception that's too high, you won't catch it anyway. So, we have to have our service record in order. We have to have our service background. With proper service background, accumulated service and merit, then we will be able to understand. It is not a mental adjustment. Spiritual conception is not like that. It's not something that people just figure out in the head with the brain. It has nothing to do with brain cells, IQ, or even intelligence. There is what we call divine intelligence, and that enables us to understand divinity. But that is not the intelligence of this world. You may only have little intelligence, but if it's divine, it's enough. You may have big, big intelligence. If it's still mundane, it's nowhere near enough. It's not the quantity, it's the quality. So with divine intelligence, sumedasha, those who have divine intelligence, who are gifted, sometimes it's those who are intelligent, but we see there are many who are intelligent, they don't worship the Supreme Lord. By their intelligence, they can't even recognize that such a Lord exists. So when it says this intelligence in this verse, Sumedashaha, it's quoted in Bhagavatam, those with sufficient intelligence, the Ajikali will worship the Supreme Lord, accompanied by Sankirtan, etc. That meaning is divine intelligence. So to understand and get the proper conception, we have to have the key verse is sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha. By proper association. What is that verse? Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha. Lava matra sadhu sangha, shastra siddhi hoi. Sarva siddhi hoi. By all the scriptures declare that by even a moment's association with saintly persons, then one will get the supreme goal of life. One will gain the supreme opportunity in life. So, if that's possible by even a moment, then what should we think about the long association? That will be so favorable. Not that we should think, oh, only a moment. Okay, here's a saintly person. Let me just go there for a moment, touch his feet, and go away. That's not what it means. The potency is there, that even a moment. But therefore, if that is the value of a moment, what is the value then of association and service to saintly persons? That is indescribable. So, through sadhu sangha association, what will happen there? Hearing. We'll hear so many things. And by hearing, we'll have some opportunity to adjust our conception. If we're there, there'll be so many service necessities, so the opportunity will arise. There were many people who came to Srila Sridhar Maharaj for initiation, and he was hesitant. Where are they from? Such and such country. But what will be their service? Just to take initiation isn't enough. No. Nowadays, people think like that. Just take initiation. Then what? Then nothing. No, it's not enough. There must be service connection to make that initiation meaningful, to make it productive, so that it's a living thing and a growing thing. He was concerned, what is their service connection? What will be their service connection? If somebody said, just sending a little money, that's pretty shabby, actually. That's a thin connection. That's a thin thread. He generally asked, under which Maharaj will this person render service? He was very much for that we should all render service under the sannyasi. The sannyasi means the head servant. Right? Once I told Govinda Maharaj, I think sannyasi means the butler. The butler is what? He's also a servant, but he runs all the other service. You know, he organizes the maitre d's, this one, that one, the cooks, the shop. And the butler is the head servant. So we're all servants. What is the meaning then of the sannyasi? Supposed to organize all the service, like the butler. So he had that inquiry always. What will be their service? Under whose service will they render service? Like this. So in sadhu sangha, then service connection will avail itself. We must take that service. We must hear properly, and how to hear? We must hear submissively. We must inquire about pertinent things. Like this, what is that verse? Tadvidi pranipadena paribhashnena sevaya. Everything is complete in that verse also. We must approach those who are learned in the science of Krishna. We must approach them submissively. We must make inquiries about the ultimate goal. And for example, Srila Prabhupada rarely entertained inquiries about his life. Very rare. In the last, he told a little bit, so little. Then in the last year of his life, I forget who was doing that, somebody was going to Srila Prabhupada every day and like getting him to tell his life. They got him to agree that he'd tell his life story. So they got something like 4 or 5 hours of Srila Prabhupada talking about himself. Otherwise, it was just a mishmash of information where he went. How old he was, he got crazy. Just a very, he wasn't, oh, Prabhupada, don't we want to know about you? He wasn't interested to tell as much about himself. What will that help you? Although it's all, we like to hear pastimes and stories and things like that, but that help is so negligible. That is a negligible side in relation to those other things. Srila Prabhupada didn't write a biography of Srila Prabhupada. There are only, I think, 2 tapes where he talks about him extensively on those tapes, and he says the same thing on both of them. By his measure, by our measure, Prabhupada wouldn't be a very good Prabhupada man. By modern measure, Prabhupada wouldn't be a good Prabhupada man, because he didn't talk much about his guru. He used to say, what can I say to you? He was a Vaikuntha man. Little things he would say, even those little things, would usually put him in a state of once I asked Srila Puri Maharaj about, once I asked him about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, I asked, is there any tape recordings? I don't know if he understood what a tape, really what a tape recording is, but I think that he did. But in those days, they didn't have recordings. They had gramophone recordings. They had these big copper discs that recorded sound, you know. They didn't have these little Walkmans back then. In case you wondered, Walkmans didn't always exist. They didn't exist 20 years ago, let's speak of it. Anyway, he looked at me like I was touched with madness to ask such a stupid question. Are there any recordings in Srila Bhakti Siddhanta? I said. He looked at me as if I had no understanding whatsoever. And he told me, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta is here in front of me, always. In other words, where are you at? It was so wonderful. So, even those things aren't important. But we recorded it. Did you catch it? That's the idea. Did you catch it? It's a living thing. You can't just record it on a tape. It's a living thing. You can listen and get the knowledge, but ultimately, if you don't catch, it's just like there's a certain section of devotees, they run the Prabhupada archives. Just generally speaking, they're very dedicated to recording this for all time. But once, one of them, who's a lifetime friend of mine from South Africa, I had an argument. I said, unless you record it in your heart, my dear friend, the microfiche, the CD-ROM, it will die. There must be a living connection going on. You can't just like, we got it all here, but we didn't follow it. We didn't do it, because none of us could do it. We're not qualified. We'll pass it to the next generation and die. Well, they'll just look at it like the Dead Sea Scrolls or anything else. It won't live. There must be a living thing. And if you look, then you look in the books and it will say, there must be a living thing. The CD-ROM one day will go, there must be a living thing. You'll hear it say it. You know, it's there. It's all there in the book, including this part. You have to have living representatives. Those who've caught, so we're trying to catch the spirit of Krishna consciousness, what it is, in the substance. What was I saying? I was saying, yes, by certain measure, we, just like before, also, sometimes I used to argue because someone used to say, and this was in way back in Europe, Bhagavan's time, that there were things that devotees didn't feel right about, and then they would say, well, the proof of it is they're doing so many books. It must be right. They're doing bigger than anybody else. I said, well, that may be a point, because Prabhupada told, you can understand something about the success of your preaching. How many devotees you make, temples open, books distributed, prasadam distributed, people to chant Hare Krishna. He also once mentioned if people are attacking you and trying to drag you into court, and things like that, and not allowing you to go into the country, that may be a sign that you're doing some good preaching too, because they're trying to stop you. But that happened when he went to Nairobi. Couldn't get in the country. He had a visa, but when he got there, there was a block where he couldn't get it through. And he didn't get in the country. He waited 14 hours in the airport and then flew back to London. And he commented that this means our preaching is making progress because someone's trying to stop. So anyway, I used to say, well, you know, if that's the only criterion of a thing, then the Pope must also be a great preacher. Because he has got many converts, much money, big money. And I said, and if that alone is the criterion, then Prabhupada was a failure most of his life, because he didn't have those things. He only had one follower, that was Prabhakar, who lived in Delhi, one old man. That was his first disciple in 1953. They didn't have any disciples, didn't have any money. Bhakti Godhead had gone off the press for like 15 years or so. So if we measure, you know, that it's right or wrong by the success, then he wasn't right. He was wrong. Therefore, he should have gone and surrendered to Gaudiya Mutt, who had big, big temples, many, many followers, all kind of prestige, many, many books and all these things. So these may be facts, but they're not the only thing that we look for to understand. Yeah, Radha Govinda Dev Ki Jai. A nice thing I read the other day was that Mother Yasoda was breastfeeding Krishna, the child, baby. Then some milk was boiling over on the stove. That milk which was boiling over was not an ordinary milk. They had a system. They had like 100 cows, and they'd take the milk of 100 cows, and they'd feed that to 10 cows. Then they'd take the milk of those 10 cows and feed that to one cow, and that cow's milk, they would give to Krishna. That milk was boiling over. So immediately, Mother Yasoda put Krishna aside, neglected him, and ran to take care of the milk. And Krishna threw a fit. Mother Yasoda caused the displeasure of Krishna. But what the commentary of the Acharyas is that even at the Lord's displeasure, the devotee has gone to take care of the Lord's service necessity. That is the Lord's milk. It may be displeasing to leave him at this point, but in order to see to his continued well-being and service, we have to go do something. That's a very fine point. That's where we make the point. I mean, not to just make all these things all the time, but we say the best way to serve ISKCON is leave it. Well, that's Prabhupada's movement. Yeah, the best way to help his movement right now is just get away from it. And to the best of our ability, stand for the truth, preach the truth, follow everything we can do to the best of our ability, avoiding offenses and all these things, all the things that admittedly everybody agrees to are problems. Just get away from and we can serve better from there. So someone will say, I don't feel like that. Then you stay there. And we'll call, and for those who can think like that, then they'll come away. Not to do harm, not to disrupt, but to better serve. So even Mother Yasoda did like that. She put Krishna aside. Seemingly, externally, he looked irritated. But internally, he was very pleased by his mother. This is the comment of the Acharyas on that particular pastime. And they say that Krishna has shown this pastime in this way, particularly for that purpose, to give that particular lesson to the devotee. The importance of the service necessity, to look after Krishna's necessity. For example, Bhachari, who mounts his round above the service to the deity, not a good Bhachari. He has to organize his day to chant his round. You cannot neglect, if you're the head Bhachari, you cannot neglect the deity in the name of your realm. Maybe you've got the wrong service, maybe you need help, whatever. But you can't neglect that. You can't neglect the Lord's service necessity. So in every situation, there's a problem. Because someone can misread something, misappropriate something. What's wrong with a gun or a knife? Nothing. It just depends on what you do with it. Good or bad. The scalpel, the very sharp knife, is used to remove the blister, the tumor, the so many things. The same thing in the hand of a deranged person, killing so many people. The policeman has a gun, and he gives protection. Son of Sam gets a gun, he kills 25. What can he do? It's not the fault of the gun. It's a big argument. The gun is bad. It's not the gun is bad. It's the people that have the gun. Before the gun, it was the sword, the knife. In the hands of the king, it was a symbol of safety. Nice thing in the king of Trivandrum, for generation after generation, the king is always called Padmanabh Das. The deity of Vishnu in Trivandrum is called Padmanabha. And the king of Trivandrum, his title is Padmanabh Das. And whenever a new king came to power there through the family succession, the old king died, the prince becomes the king, then a special sword is prepared for the king. That's why the sword. And the king then used to go to Darshan of Lord Padmanabha and place his, because there's a coronation, and in the coronation he gets a sword. Then he would go before the deity and put the sword on the threshold of the deity. then he would, after paying obeisances and some pujas and things like that, then he would take back that sword. Then he'd wear that sword, and he would rule his kingdom as Padmanabha Das, servant of Lord Vishnu. Go, Premanandi!
Here I go.